Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardawar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, we are diving deep into Google and the state of Google and our troubles with Google with a special guest. Specifically, like why you may want to pay $10 a month to use Kagi, a private search engine, instead of Google. And also, we'll talk about Google, everything happening around the incognito mode lawsuit. Google just said that it's going to be destroying the data it collected without telling people. So we'll talk about all that stuff. As always, if you're enjoying the show, folks, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. All right, let's talk about all this Google stuff. And joining us to do that is 404 Media co-founder Jason Kebler. Hey, Jason, how's it going?
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you. And also, you're a podcaster as well. You're co-host of the 404 Media podcast. How are things going over there? It's just great to see independent media, you know, springing up these days.
It's going really well. We're really thankful for the people who've subscribed to us. I think we're going to talk a little bit about paying for web services, and we sort of launched this for former people from Motherboard. It's a paid $10 a month subscription, and we weren't sure. I mean, it's been going 7.5 months right now, and we're at a point where it's like, okay, this is a real business. Nice. We're able to do it. So really thankful for the support. And I guess when we talk about Kagi, we'll talk about why I think paying for stuff is good.
Yeah. I mean, that's a thing I say often is like, if you like something, folks, please chip in a little bit. That is kind of the way the web is working now. Because if you leave it up to advertising and search engines and whatnot, or just advertising, it's not really going to work out, I guess. So, Jason, you wrote this great piece about breaking up your friendship with Google and moving over to Kagi. And Kagi is a $10 a month search engine that is just like stripped down, better Google, right?
I mean, that's what it seems to be like to me. I had heard about Kagi from some friends, and I had seen like a lot of buzz about it and thought actually that it was much bigger than it is. But I went and looked at its user data, like which is all public. And they have about 25,000 subscribers. So, I mean, in the grand scheme of the internet, that's not that big. But it works so well that I was like, this must be a massive company. Like,
and that's 25,000 people paying $10 a month too, right, which is nice. They don't have ads. So can you describe what Kagi is specifically?
So Kagi is a paid ad-free search engine that does not track you either. So it doesn't collect the data. Like all of the searches are anonymous, and it's similar to DuckDuckGo in that sense, but it doesn't have any ads at all. Whereas DuckDuckGo has some contextual ads based on search terms.
And DuckDuckGo is based on Bing now, isn't it? Instead of
DuckDuckGo is primarily based on Bing, and I've written more about search recently, but it seems like there's only a few search indexes out there. There's Google, there's Bing, there's Mojik and a couple others, but for the most part, it's like Google and Bing.
Yeah, for sure.
And so Kagi,
I just want to put this out there. We do work for Yahoo, and I think somewhere. I don't know. I think Yahoo has a search engine somewhere, right?
As far as I know, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yahoo still has a search engine confirmed here. Sherlyn, like you are the one who's been doing a lot of Google coverage for us. Like, we've talked about how things have fallen. How do you feel about the state of like Google search at this point?
I mean, I think it's very important to point out at the top of this episode, not just because you just mentioned it, that yes, our parent company Yahoo runs a search engine. It's like built into my URL bar whenever I sign into my employee profile, which is really annoying. I think it's important to note also that we're not advertising for Kagi here, that like we're just comparing the state of various search engines and that Google has an obvious dominance in this space, primarily because it's managed to be like the baked in search engine in most URL bars in a lot of browsers, I think, because of Chrome's dominance as a browser as well. So like Kaggy can be anonymous, can, you know, claim to not track your search history, but don't forget that Chrome as a browser may be tracking the sites you visit. There would be,
we will talk a lot about that.
Right, not third-party cookies anymore, but they are coming up with different ways like Flock, like all of these different like privacy sandbox tools to track you still. So like I wouldn't, you know, be like too excited about not being tracked just yet. I think there's still ways to go until like different parts of, you know, how to use the internet kind of wise up to that. But yeah, I mean, I think Google search has, I would say, been like one of the most frustrating parts of the way the media landscape is the way it is now. It is the fact that the way Google ranks websites has such a huge influence over what websites do well or not, that like the fact that Google can tweak one thing in its algorithm and like tens of thousands of sites are like, oh, FML, we're dead now. So I think that some competition at the very least is important. And Bing, Yahoo, Lycos Asia, I don't know what else. I forget all the ones from back in the day anymore, but like, there's not enough
web
competition.
Crawler, Lycos, AltaVista.
Thank you, AltaVista.
All the fun Jeeves. Ones. You gotta remember Ask Jeeves, yeah.
Was Ask Jeeves a search or so, like a website? I guess it is a search.
It was, here. It was. Yeah.
Ask Jeeves was the proto AI ChatGPT bot, but not really. It was just a search engine.
It was just a fancy search engine. It should be said, like, part of the reason we're talking about all this stuff is like, it's not just like the state of Google and how it's messing with websites. It's also, you do a Google search and it stinks, right? You do a search and you get, for me, I get the AI search results up top, which take like a little time to generate. So not as fast as it used to be. Then you have the sponsored posts. Then you have other ads all around there. And then maybe like halfway down the page, then I start to see actual search results. And often those now are just dominated by the SEO farming sites too. So even those can't fully be trusted. So $10 a month to get away from that and to have a pure Google experience, that I can see the appeal there. Jason, is Kaggy is using the Google search index, but also other things, right?
Yeah, so it's essentially an aggregator, which as a user, you don't see this layer at all. But it's essentially Google, but without all the stuff that you just mentioned. In my article, I did a search for vacuum cleaner. And like you said, like the top, it's just like tons of like boxes of vacuum cleaners to buy. And then on the sidebar, there's like a shopping search and there's an AI aspect to it. And then the first 8 links are sponsored. And then the ones after that are like affiliate link spam. And then you search on Kaggy and it's just like, oh, these are websites that most of them sell vacuum cleaners, but it's not the same sort of like bombard like sensory overload that you get with Google. And obviously like vacuum cleaner is a very purchase oriented search, but I found that it is a much like purer search experience than, and honestly, like I remember the day that I used Google for the first time, like it's this core memory. Yes. I was on AOL Instant Messenger. I couldn't find something on Lycos. I was talking to my cousin and she was like, try Google. And I remember how clean and nice it was. And that was like a core internet memory for me. And then when I started using Kaggy, which is about 3 months ago, I was like, oh my God, like I forgot that search could look like this.
I think for younger folks too, they may not realize, but like in the early 2000s, late 90s, like Google was optimized for dial-up internet, right? It was mostly text. There were no top-level ads. Eventually AdSense became a thing, but it was basically all text and highlighting the most appropriate sites, right? The most relevant sites. That was the glory of Google. And then the AdSense business became too big, right? And then that had to dominate everything, I guess.
I found that anytime I try to quit a Google product, there is something that draws me back to it. It's like I left Chrome for Opera a few years ago, and I really like that. Opera ran on Chromium. I think it still does. But there were some compatibility issues with like core websites that I needed to use. So I had to open Chrome again. And I switched to Apple Maps once and I used it for biking directions and the biking directions took me onto the highway. And so I was like, okay, well, that experiment is over. I have to go back to Google Maps. And with Kaggy, it's the first time ever that I've like switched from a Google product and forgot that I switched. I always felt like I was taking some sort of like personal sacrifice to use an alternative because the alternative was always so much worse. And in this case, I was like, oh, this is better. It's fine. And it's the first time I've ever felt that way about like purposefully trying to switch away from a Google product.
Go ahead, Sherlyn. You were going to say something.
I mean, I was just going to talk about like the fact that at my school camp when I was 15 or something, the way we were assigned different houses was different names of search engines. Like that's how many there were actually out there. We had like 10 different search engine names.
What kind of camp was this? What
school camp? I don't even know. We were 15, but
this is Singapore. Singapore, glorifying all the tech, I guess. Yeah.
I was Team Hot something. I can't remember Hot. What was the like search
Hot
engine name that started with Hot?
Hotspot.
Whatever. I think. It started with it. Anyway, that's just a tangent. Yeah. I do want to say that like it's sadly ironic that what all these boxes, the shopping box, the news box, the Discover, the fact that like when you search a question, the answer appears at the top, that sort of thing, were built to make search or Google search better at the start. And now it's just become worse because of all the like overload. Like we know that Google people listen to this podcast, which is why I'm kind of
being
like,
oh, this is good. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand the intentions were good, but it also seems like it opened up new ways to make more money. It's just capitalism again. It's like, oh, here's how you place in the news box that appears above all the results. At first, you were like, here's how to place top of the rankings. Now it's like how to get above the rankings. It's just really annoying that capitalism is driven away or Google away from like a good search experience, which it sounds like what Kagi is. And it also sounds like what Google used to be when it was very text heavy. It was text based.
I like how you're being fair about this, Sherlyn. I love that you're trying to be fair. But listen, I was here. I was here in the early web. Jason, we were all here. We saw like over time what happened to Google, and it is the whole intuitification thing that Cory Doctorow has like, you know, talked about. It is, we've seen it get steadily worse and worse and worse to the point where it honestly hurts me to go to Google sometimes. Like I feel dirty going to Google. And so the idea of paying for something like Kagi just seems nice and clean, and please save me from this like ad infested hellscape. Jason, how do we know we can trust Kagi?
Well, I mean that's I don't have a good answer here, honestly.
How can you trust anything, right? How can you trust anyone?
It's a new company, and also it's like it's having the same problems that many startups are having, where they have a CEO, obviously it's a company, they have a Discord, they have a forum, and like on the Discord and forum, there are very often disagreements. And like sort of as at the very end of writing this article, because I had just been using it and honestly not thinking about it. And that's what made me be like, I want to write about this because I don't think about search anymore. And with Google, it's like every time I search, I was like, why is an AI generated article appearing above the scoop that we broke, and we can't even get indexed on Google, or like Google News at least. But anyways, the CEO of Kagi is having a lot of like arguments about whether they should link to the suicide hotline when someone searches for like a self-harm search term or something like that. And it is trying to sort of do the tech bro like neutrality argument. And I think that makes me a little bit skeptical about where Kagi might go at some point. And then the other thing I'd say is that they are also experimenting with AI. And I don't know why, because the search works so well. And it seems like a distraction to sort of their core business, especially if they only have 25,000 subscribers. It's like, focus on this core product, not me giving them advice. I just don't understand it. But they haven't really like shoved that down people's throats yet in the way that you get on Bing and often on Google. And so I guess I'm like cautiously, I like the product right now. I do not know what's going to happen to Kagi, but the fact that it is providing me with better search results than I'm getting on Google using largely like a stripped down version of Google suggests to me either that Google can get better, like it has the ability to get better, or another competitor can emerge and actually do all the things that Kagi is doing now without some of these like unpleasantries or potential intuitification, as you already brought up.
I think
that was very long.
I think what's going to happen, if I'm, you know, predicting Google's capitalist thoughts, right, is if they were smart, to offer a Google Lite, but like premium Lite, and then charge $2 a month instead of $10 that Kagi is charging you, and just revert to its old text-based version that's mostly ad-free, and then Kagi is out of business. So Kagi, if you're listening, don't go the AI route. Just be what you're doing best and then have Google buy you or something.
I do think like Google makes more money by serving ads and doing stuff to people rather than having you pay even a minimal amount. You would have to pay like $15 to $20 a month, honestly, for
if
Google to be like...
If they care about people, like they say they do sometimes.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Maybe they might. I'm waiting for a tech company to come out and surprise me and be like, fuck capitalism.
I get your hesitance here, Jason, because I think we've all had our hearts broken by the tech companies, but also like any company like working under the system of capitalism at this point. So yeah, this is great. This is a great relationship for now. I'm hoping for the best for you and Kagi, and I'll check it out too. But while we're talking about Google, there was also the news this week. I saw everybody was actually talking about this Monday morning. Google says it will destroy browsing data that it collected from Chrome's incognito mode. It's a result of a $5 billion privacy lawsuit that's been going on over the past few years, where a couple of years ago, Google admitted like, hey, they were actually still collecting a lot of data during incognito mode, even though everybody thought it was totally private. So do we have any thoughts about this and just the state of Chrome? Can we trust Google when, like, even incognito mode is something that they were still feeding, you know, getting data from?
I primarily use incognito mode to, like, log myself out of Google and search for, tickets and things like this. I think that for the maybe average user, the privacy of incognito mode, like, you know, the guy with the sunglasses on and the fake mustache, etc., like, it suggests a much more private experience than actually existed. Whereas me, I was like, oh, well, I know about things like VPN at a minimum, Tor, if you like really want to have anonymity online, and even those can be cracked. And so I do think that this lawsuit like makes sense, because I don't think that Google was upfront about how much data it was collecting while you're using incognito mode. At the same time, I personally was like, oh, I'm not doing anything sensitive on incognito mode because I know Google is an advertising company and it's a targeted advertising company. That said, I do think that we are seeing this sort of shift where, I mean, it's been years now, obviously, but don't be evil was the thing that, you know, everyone was, that was Google's slogan. And I think we're far past that, but we're sort of now at a point where it's like, can you just like stop jamming trackers and AI and can you just stop making everything mm-hmm. worse? It's like you open up Maps and it's like all sponsored content and things like that. And it's, I felt with search, I felt like it was the frog getting boiled, where I don't know, like I just used Google. And then I looked up one day and I was like, oh, I'm getting bombarded with nonsense. And I think that people are starting to wake up to that sort of across the board. And this incognito situation is sort of part and parcel to that, as far as I know. Yeah. But what do y'all think?
It is. I mean, it's gross. I feel like I have been talking about it on this podcast for a while, that I don't trust Google for consumer products anymore, because they have broken our hearts so many times. They also ship bad hardware. They don't support the software as much as they should. Like I've just like, I'm so fed up with Google as a company. And for me, this was like the tipping point of like, oh yeah, of course, even incognito mode is a complete mess. Trillin, I know you're more pro Google. How do you feel about this at this point?
I mean, I think my use of incognito mode is a bit more similar to Jason's, in that I use it as a way to disguise myself and like X out of my identity on Google to find things. Like, look, this is when I Google myself, I want to know like what someone else other than me would see, or like when I Google Engadget, or when I'm like you said, shopping for airplane tickets or whatever. So I'm less concerned about like my actual, you know, being spied on, right? That sort of stuff doesn't quite bother me, just because I feel like all our data is being tracked one way or another, whether it's Chrome, whether it's, would you be more surprised, Devendra, if like Safari was the one where the incognito mode was actually still tracking info?
Probably. I would be more surprised because Apple's not the company that's built its business on tracking data, right? Like, it's,
exactly. So Google is, I see this as like my fair take on this, my like, let's give you the benefit of the doubt take on this, is that Google wasn't nefarious. It just like forgot to turn off a switch.
No, they knew. It wasn't forgetting, Trillin. This was knowingly implementing the technology to track stuff. Yeah.
I feel as if, like, I mean, that's obviously bad. I feel as if, like, someone higher up did that and then people lower didn't know. And then, like, somewhere along the line, the communication lapsed and maybe someone took over that.
It seems like they were well, like, I'm just putting out here in our post about Google deleting the data. In 2019, Google Chief Marketing Officer Lorraine Tuhill suggested to CEO Sundar Pichai that private was the wrong word to use for incognito mode because it, quote, risked exacerbating known misconceptions. In the later email exchange, she said, "We are limited in how strongly we can market incognito mode because it's not truly private. This is 2019. Thus requiring really fuzzy hedging language that is almost more damaging." And that's, you know, that's chief marketing officer too. So not a super technical person. Yeah.
So that's,
I,
like,
think it's really telling that the language when you open a new incognito mode window has changed this week as a result of the lawsuit, presumably. But it now says this won't change how data is collected by websites you visit and the services they use, including Google. Yeah. But that language wasn't there before. So I can understand why people had misconceptions. It definitely, I don't think it was clear unless you sort of knew about Google's business model.
It's sort of like Tesla's, like, selling self-driving as a thing, like full self-driving. That's not full self-driving. That's not even anywhere close to it. So don't try to pretend it is. I love that the image of incognito mode is still a guy in a hat with shades, right? Like a spy in a hat. But it's more like the spy if they just had a hat and glasses, but like a completely, like, naked trench coat or something, like a trench coat with a giant hole in it. That's what the image actually is. What a mess. Gotta love Google. I don't know. So, okay, Jason, any final thoughts on this before we let you go?
I guess I was going to say, I didn't really get to it in the Coggy thing, but I tried to not pay for anything on the internet for many years, like a long time. I was like, I'll pirate stuff. I'll do, you know, as a teen, I don't break the law anymore. But I was very anti-paying for things. And now I am in a situation where I can afford to pay for the services that I like the best. And I've subscribed to a lot of news sites that charge money. My news site charges money. I hope people check it out and are willing to subscribe to it. And I have started buying software. Like, I've started buying apps. I've started doing subscriptions. And of course, there is an aspect of subscription fatigue. But I've also, it feels like a cheat code to, like, bypassing this very harmful advertising surveillance-based business model. And of course, there's still tons of that as well. But just from a user experience standpoint, I'm like, oh, we still know how to make things that work. We're just purposefully making them worse for the advertising business model. And so that's why I find, because if you told me I was going to pay for a search engine a year ago, I would be like, are you kidding me? There's no way. And now I do it and I'm like, oh, I get it now. This is why. So I don't know. Check us out. Check Coggy out. Check out. Consider paying money. As you said, Dev, you've been advocating this for a while, but it has made my life better to pay for things straight up.
Awesome. Can you tell us a bit about the 404 Media podcast too? Because I know you guys go deep on a lot of the original reporting you do. I saw you have a discussion about the XC backdoor that we have not even really talked about here, but that's a backdoor that affects pretty much every Unix and Linux installation worldwide. That seems bad. Can you give us a glimpse of that?
Yeah. So the 404 Media podcast is our podcast. If you want to hear me ramble some more, I'm on there every Wednesday, along with my three 404 Media co-founders. And yeah, the XC backdoor is a super interesting one. It's basically a sock puppet malicious coder managed to socially engineer their way into having a trusted maintainer status, meaning that they could update the software for this very esoteric Linux compression utility that I had never heard of before, but as you mentioned, is in millions and millions and millions of computers, and played this long con, essentially like 2-year long con, then pushed a backdoor into it, and it was sort of caught by accident before it seemingly could do massive damage. But it sort of highlights the problems with a lot of open source software where tech giants rely on this infrastructure that is, like, largely maintained by volunteers. And often those volunteers are doing this as a side project. Often they are pressured into pushing updates that they don't know about or don't want to do because they just are stretched super thin. So super interesting hack. Not good, but also very interesting to talk about. So it was just like, it's a chance.
Well, I love how you guys framed it as a labor issue, which I think is very much the case. And we don't really think about that in the open source community at all. So yeah. Awesome. So check that out on at 404 Media and the 404 Media podcast. Where can we find you online, Jason?
I am everywhere. I'm on Blue Sky, Twitter, Mastodon, Threads, all Jason Koebler, K-O-E-B-L-E-R.
Let's move on to some other news. And we saw a story drop late last night, actually, that Apple is developing personal robots for your home, according to Bloomberg's Mark Gurman. And I'm not surprised. We saw the story about Apple, like, you know, working on a car project, an electric car project for a decade. Vision Pro has been something they've been thinking about for a decade as well. A home robot by Apple. Sure. Why not? That makes sense. What do you think, Sherlyn?
Home products have done so well for Apple in the past, right? I mean, the TV Plus,
they've been slow.
The Apple TV is good. But the HomePod, I mean, if you have a HomePod out there, tell me. Like, I think the people who have them love it.
The HomePod Mini is great. The big HomePod was not. Yeah.
That one kind of disappeared. Like, we don't hear much about it anymore.
The Mini
is still around.
I think the rumors are that they may be refreshing the HomePod at some point soon. But the Mini, it's cheaper. It sounds good enough. It gives you, like, all the functionality you need for a small room. So I totally get it. I want to point out for the Apple TV, by the way, Apple also took a lot of shit for years because the Apple TV was, like, this cool thing that they launched. And then it just kind of ignored for a while. And then Roku and Google and everybody started getting into set-top boxes. So it took Apple a while, like not until the 2014 era Apple TV, which was the Apple TV 4K, that it got really good. But it took them forever.
Yeah. Based on Gurman's report, this is like Apple's home devices group that's in charge of the development, which is like where I'm assuming TV and HomePod stuff comes from. So I guess good luck. I think my initial reaction when I heard about this is that, like, it's a Echo Show-esque device. Mm-hmm, according to, like, Bloomberg, it was, like, a mobile robot that either follows users around their home or it's a tabletop device that uses a robot to move a screen around. Like, the latter sounds very similar to some smart screen type things that, like, move just to make sure the camera is still facing you, kind of like center stage, but with robotics. But I guess we'll see. I don't have a strong feeling either way.
I will say it's kind of, I think I have more faith in this than like Tesla's stupid humanoid robot thing where.
Yeah, for sure.
That's just another like marketing stunt for Elon Musk, right? Whereas this is, the report is, they have that tabletop thing that can move a screen to follow you, but also they have developed a robot that can follow users around their home to do things, like just follows you around your home. I do think it's fascinating that Apple never really got into true robotics type of stuff. Meanwhile, I've been covering iRobot and the Roomba stuff forever, and I just reviewed the latest one. The Roomba can now vacuum your house, and while it's vacuuming, also mop your floors and then dump it all in the waste bin. And it's just like, I leave my house and I come back 2 hours later and it's spectacular. Like, it looks really good. So I think there's room for Apple to do a lot of this stuff. It's just kind of ignored dirty things like vacuums and HomeBots. Yeah,
I know. I almost thought like an Apple either hiring people from iRobot or outright buying might make some sense.
Well,
but yeah, they're not.
Amazon
going to...
just failed to buy iRobot, don't forget. So yeah.
Yeah. So they, I also just don't think that it's like, it aligns with Apple's brand identity, to be talking about pet poop. So it seems unlikely that Apple would do that.
Yeah.
But it does seem like there's a lot of room for development here. And I'm not surprised why Apple might be considering the space,
The reason I go back to Roombas is just like, we talk about, hey, where are the home robots? There they are. It's a robot that goes around your house
Robovax.
And cleans up for you. And I've seen it go from really bad. Like, I had my first apartment out of college. I got a refurbished Roomba. It was like a 2003 era Roomba. Not that great. But what it was good at was I just let it go. I just let it clean my floors and it would like bounce off the walls with like a really weird, dumb algorithm. Had no camera, had no sensors. It just bounced around the walls and cleaned up my floors. And I was like, okay, that's like one, that's like an hour worth of work I don't have to do while that thing like buzzes around. So that's cool.
I will say that it's not like other companies haven't tried home robots. Let's talk briefly about how like Samsung announced Bali this year at CES. Uh-huh. It's the ball that rolls around your home and has a projector and can project onto your screen and like listen
that's
to
cool.
your...
That's cool. It's a cool idea.
Yeah, it's very cool. Very cool idea. However, I will also remind you that in September of 2021, Amazon launched or announced Astro, which is an Alexa robot that will roam around your home. Sorry for everyone that
didn't
heard
launch
that.
It. Yeah.
Hot word. They did, well, it is available as of November 2023 as a security guard is for businesses to buy. So not for your home anymore.
It's like that robot. Have you seen it at grocery stores, Sherlyn? Like some Stop and Shops around New York, like would just have this patrolling security robot that just
sure.
like follows
you.
I mean,
in Singapore, we've had a lot of these sorts of like public space robots for like returning your trays or cleaning the airport. Like I'm familiar with that. But like in your home is really, it's been such a tricky space. I mean, the Astro sells for like $1,600. All I'm trying to say is that like to be any more sophisticated than a RoboVac would be extremely challenging for any company to take on. So
yeah,
anyway.
And Apple is a company with more money than God and a lot of time and research talent. So yeah, if anybody can try to do this, I can see like, hey, let's wait. Let's let everybody fail, right? Let's let everybody stumble, which is their general attitude with smartphones, with MP3 players, and then let's come in with something better. So, okay. We'll see. Talking about Amazon, by the way, and, you know, some really cool technology that they talked about. It sounds like Amazon is walking out of its self-checkout grocery store technology. It's removing Just Walk Out from fresh grocery stores around the U.S., according to a report by The Information. You know, that was the thing that that had like all the cameras and sensors around the store. And you walk in, you basically tap in, you sign in. It tracks everything you pick up. You walk out. You don't go to the cashier or anything. You don't do self-checkout. There are a lot of reports that it's been plagued by issues. And also, it's had like an illusion of automation. Apparently, there were over 1,000 people in India just verifying these transactions. So they were looking at photos. They were looking at like things that you were doing and actually buying. Not actually scanning the real-time camera feeds. Although, I feel like if this had really taken off, that would not have been impossible. But anyway, it was people verifying these things, sort of like the way you verify a CAPTCHA or something, right?
What happens when they are like, oh, that person walked out with like 7 dozen eggs instead of one?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you get a summons after, like a speeding ticket?
I think like, yeah, maybe, we don't know. I don't think there's been any report of that, but
that's
it
quite
could
hilarious
be like,
to me.
Hey, there was an error in our system and we noticed that you took these items. I think they can be very kind and passive aggressive about it.
I guess since you all have
Amazon accounts. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They could be like, hey, we noticed in your, we mistakenly, you know, mistook that you undercharged you and we are charging you for the full amount because here's the video evidence, you thief. And they'll be very nice about it. But also, it's really hard to like, it's really hard to steal things in those stores because the cameras are everywhere. So you can't just like start stuffing stuff in your pockets because they see it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Totally true. So
you will get caught, basically, right? Like you can run out of there, but you will get caught. I like my big question was always like, how did they prevent the people who would like, you know, like the dine and dashers, right? Like you just walk in and you just run. I don't know. I guess they have security at the entrance
and exit, and then also
cameras, mm-hmm. you know, looking at every single person with an account.
You can't run in a panopticon. Like when you sign yourself in, right? And then you are bombarded by surveillance. Like there's no. There is no running. Have you used any of those stores, Sherlyn? Like, have you tried?
I have, but I've always been like, you know, wondering if you can set up just a scam account. I never overthought it, I guess. But like, can you set up a, you know, like
you can't. You can't really.
And go in? I don't know.
Because they have your face and everything. Like, I think at some point you also have to put in your ID, like for one of those things. I'm not quite sure if it's this, but it feels weird entering a space where you're like, oh, everything I do is being heavily tracked. If I pick up something and look at it, put it down, should I be worried that they think I'm going to be stealing this thing if it's not exactly in the right place where it was originally? Like, it is such a weird sensation to walk into the stores. Like, by the time I'm out, I like take a breath and I'm like, I just want to go to a bodega. I just want to go buy a Diet Coke at the
That's
bodega.
So funny to me.
You know,
I will just put this out there. that back when I was on dating apps, one of my pictures may or may not have been a picture from one of those self-checkout counters where the camera was focused on, like, who, you know, like, it's a clearly a security measure to have photos as you check out of you, like, whatever. But I was like, huh, I look cute. Like, we have such different reactions to cameras on us, Devendra.
Well, but I get it. I think sometimes, yeah. I mean, there are stories about this, you know, about certain types of personalities that just enjoy watching themselves on screen. Anyway, but no, I'm not surprised. Wait, did you take a picture of the self-checkout camera of you? Because you were like, this is a good angle.
I was like, damn, I look good. So I took a picture. I was like, I'm the sort of person that if I see a security camera, I look at it and I wave. Like, I'm a little stupid like that. Because I know I'm not about to do something wrong, I guess. So, but I also understand, like, you know, I tense up when I walk next to a police car, by, you know, for example, no matter what, right?
In Singapore, didn't you grow up like under a little more surveillance than...
Maybe I'm more used to it, right? Yeah. Even in Singapore, I would still tend, like, I had family members who were in the Singapore police force, and I would still, like, walk past a police car and feel like, oh, hold my breath for some reason, even though I know I was not doing anything wrong. I get it. Like, this sort of security presence does feel a little like surveillance, and it feels a little uncomfortable. So I get it.
And it's one thing if it's the police. It's another if it's just like a company being like, listen, we can do all sorts of stuff to you. We have your data, man. Like, we have your Alexa records. Who knows what we could do to you? Anyway, so it sounds like that technology is leaving a lot of like US stores. I believe Amazon is still going to be running some of their checkout stores, but it's not they deploy Just Walk Out in more places. And that a lot of that is just going to be deployed. It's still going to be offered in stores in the UK, which is surprising. I feel like the UK and Europe would be more into locking this down. But we'll see if this goes anywhere. I just have to say, like, I remember the week after Amazon bought Whole Foods. And I was like, oh, this sucks. But then I went to Whole Foods.
Yeah.
And
it's incredible now.
Well, but everything was a little off. Like, it was sort of like you went there and their brains were sucked up. All the Whole Foods workers, it's like their brains were sucked up by aliens. Mm. But because they were more stressed out, they were more, like, frazzled because they had to be restocking shelves and doing stuff more. And I got to the cashier and the dude was just like a zombie, just like miserable. I'm like, oh, man, I feel bad for you right now, actually. I just got out of there. It's not like the Trader Joe's thing where the cashiers are singing to you and having conversations with you, right?
Happy, yeah.
It is Amazon just like sucked whatever soul was in Whole Foods right out of there. But you're saying it's better now?
I do. Well, I think it's better in that because I like when technology makes things more efficient, right? So the self-checkout is actually incredibly good at the Whole Foods in my neighborhood now, where it's like, I just open my app, scan the in-store code, I'm talking specifically how self-checkout has improved, but like my prior Whole Foods experience before that was the Columbus Circle Whole Foods mostly in New York, and the lines were always insane because it's partly like a more crowded location to begin with, but like the checkout people obviously overworked and harassed by like just an endless onslaught of people.
And the Whole Foods customers are more awful.
If you get a lot of tourists too, I don't know what the like feeling is, but I didn't remember a lot of like self-checkout options there. So I can imagine if they've been replaced by robots, they're not going to be happy either. And also suddenly going from Whole Foods employees to Amazon workers just doesn't sound like the best switch. So I can understand how it might feel really shitty. But for me, my experience has been like the new Whole Foods in my neighborhood has been clean and fun. And everyone there seems to be very happy, actually. Like people who work at this new Whole Foods.
Well, it's a new store, just opened in my neighborhood. And maybe now they're like, hey, I have a job that pays pretty well. So that's great. I'm happy about having a job.
And there were like long-ass lines of people like outside this Whole Foods looking for jobs when they were looking for people to hire too. So you know, I can talk from only from my own experience, which is like the person behind the meat counter was really friendly and like told me how to cook the like stuff that I just bought. And it was great.
They're also getting paid a lot more now because of a lot of like labor rights pushes So that's something like I'm sure like when that Amazon purchase happened, I don't know what the Whole Foods people were getting paid, but it seemed like Amazon was making their lives a lot worse. Kind of related to all this, by the way, like we saw that there was news at Target and a lot of other stores are slowly like pulling back on self-checkout, which is kind of interesting too, because there's good and bad to it. If you have like under 10 items, which I think is the new Target limit, sure, fine, fast. I've seen people like just be really difficult in those situations too. And sometimes I'm like, let me just like stand somewhere and let the cashier do the thing, you know? So I feel like we're kind of reverting back in some of those situations. Yeah. Real quick, we've got a couple, you know, other stories to run through. We saw the news. I was surprised to see the news that Yahoo, our parent company, bought the AI news app Artifact this week. That's the app from Instagram's co-founders. It does a good job of like compiling news from different sources, but it also like it can summarize longer articles for you using AI. So, okay, Artifact is not dead. There were reports that it was about to like be turned off because the service actually cost money to run. But Artifact will still be alive, and now it's a part of Yahoo. Thoughts, Erlen?
I wonder how it's going to be used. I mean, are they just leaving it as an app, or are they trying to integrate it into other parts of Yahoo, I guess? It's really what I'm wondering. But beyond that, I mean, people who have used, I've never used Artifact. Everyone that has seems to just think really highly of it. So
it's maybe cool. It is a cool thing, but it's sort of like staring your killer in the face and being like, oh, you have really cool features, you know? But it's also like, you will be the downfall of everything I'm working for, actually. So it feels weird at the same time. We just have a weird relationship with AI right now.
Everyone that I know loves it, like you said. And then like, I guess, you know, if, I don't know. I mean, good for Kevin Systrom for making more money, really, is like.
I'm not going to say good. He's already a billionaire. No, stop it, Trilby.
I know. Just like, if I were as smart as him to like be able, I'm not praising. I'm more like, good for you. Like, I guess, like, can I have more money? Rather than, it's not like he's good. It's more good for you. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
it's
you
a
can,
bit different.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Okay. Okay. You're making it clear. Like, you are a fan of the AI and Kevin Systrom's AI.
I'm not, but okay.
Please don't hurt Trillin. Yes. We also, man, there was a crazy news this week, too. Like, a 7.4 magnitude earthquake hit West Taiwan. And there was a lot of video footage out that around that. It wasn't in a super populous area. But the latest story I saw is 9 people are dead, hundreds are injured, 56 people were trapped as of April 2nd. There was some footage of just buildings like basically on their side, like leaning a Tower of Pizza side. Taiwan did go through a pretty massive earthquake in the 90s, I believe, and a lot of their buildings were re-engineered, and new buildings are engineered to deal with the swaying and everything you need to do to deal with an earthquake. So it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but just want to acknowledge this because, hey, we've talked about Taiwan quite a bit. We go to Computex in Taiwan. There's also a story, of course, the tech angle is that TSMC, which makes all the chips that are powering, you know, pretty much all of our devices at this point, or at least all the mobile devices, their facilities, like, were able to, like, come back and start producing right after the quake. It does bring to mind, though, it is really precarious to have our like next generation chip production localized in an island that is, you know, China's always like, we got to take this back, you know, and then the earthquakes are on the other side and tsunamis are another potential issue because of the earthquakes and everything. It seems rough. So, yeah, TSMC, I believe, was opening a factory in the U.S. as well. Like they're trying to spread themselves out a little bit, but just wild, just crazy. And yeah. Or, you know, shout out to everybody in Taiwan. I hope the earthquake did not affect you too much. I hope everybody's okay, because that footage seemed terrifying. Did you see it, Trillin? Did you see the news report?
I saw the news, and my parents were in China at the time, and I was like, oh, how close are you to, like, that part of the world? But they were fine. They were, like, flying out just as, like, everything was happening, so that's good. But yeah, good luck to everyone out there. Hopefully no one's, you know, listening to this podcast has been too, like, affected by it.
Yeah, we need to reach out to some of our former colleagues in Taiwan, too. Yeah. Shout out to Mr. Andy. I miss him. I miss doing Computex with him. We also saw a story. Hey, the FCC is going to vote this month to restore net neutrality. It's finally happening. It's finally happening after there's a Democratic majority in the FCC. President Biden like issued an executive order in 2021 to make it happen, but they couldn't because they were waiting to fill that FCC chair. So, okay, that's good. This is good. I don't know if we can have like
long enough.
It took long enough. And remember, like, this is the thing that will make ISPs treat broadband more like an essential service and not do things that could basically block or throttle content, you know, fast lanes for internet access. Unfair pricing was a big thing too. I do hope the FCC starts to look at things like, was it bandwidth caps, which is still a thing that exists right now for home internet. you know, my parents still have to deal with this because they use Comcast. And Comcast in some residential areas, you're like, you got 2 terabytes, buddy. That's your home. That's your bandwidth for the month. If you go over that, you have to pay more. That to me seems ridiculous. So I do hope like we start to look at these things. Yeah, this has been like a long, long story too, because remember Biden had nominated Gigi Sohn to be in the FCC and she withdrew her nomination March of last year, basically a year ago, because of cruel attacks, quote, cruel attacks from cable and media industries. Like this is how bad it was. Like she released a statement saying, "It is a sad day for our country and our democracy when dominant industries with assistance from unlimited dark money get to choose their regulators. And with the help of their friends in the Senate, the powerful cable and media companies have done just that." So this is a woman who was, you know, she was working under FCC Chair Tom Wheeler during the Obama administration. Like she had the experience, but Republicans and even some Democrats like really took her to task. Like it was a really gross thing to see what they were doing to this woman. She just gave up. And that's just terribly sad. So anyway, net neutrality is coming back. That's a good thing. I'll quickly run down some of these stories here. I wrote the news about Apple bringing spatial persona avatars to Vision Pro. This is a thing that they showed off last year at WWDC. So the personas are their like weird, semi-realistic looking avatars, right?
Yeah.
And when
you're FaceTiming,
when you're FaceTiming, yes. And if you're in a Vision Pro and you call somebody else with a Vision Pro, you get their persona in a window. What this does is you can actually take that persona when you're in a FaceTime chat, hit a button, and they become like a disembodied person in your home. So you
like
can
a
like
floating head.
Like a floating head. So you can collaborate on like a freeform document or like a web page together or something that you're watching together in the TV app, the SharePlay stuff. It's like they're standing right next to you, which is kind of wild. I've just set it up. Like I've had to update the Vision Pro that I'm testing. But it seems pretty wild. And I've talked to a bunch of people who've spent basically a couple hours hanging out with their friends over Vision Pro. And we're like, it feels like you're hanging out with friends around the table. So kind of cool. We're slowly seeing the realization of the Vision Pro like become a thing, like collaborative remote work and remote play and remote fun with your friends. So that's cool. Yeah,
interesting.
That's interesting.
I just want to say that one of my core memories was of a nightmare of a dead relative's floating head. So it just is not great. But yeah. Seems like do the heads only exist while the FaceTime call is going on?
So
like
it is a FaceTime call, connected through a FaceTime call. You can revert them back to the FaceTime window if you want, just by hitting a button. And what's interesting is that they can all manipulate the content to look better for them, so they can make like a window bigger or whatever, but it doesn't affect how you view it. So you can hang out with your friends, but also still have your personalized view of whatever you're watching or working on. So that's kind of cool. It's kind of interesting how we're seeing the idea of Vision Pro like slowly develop. But again, like Apple's not selling a ton of these things. So I feel like they're not putting a ton of resources into it at this point. We also saw a story that California is introducing a right to disconnect bill that would allow employees to possibly relax. This is in its very early stages, but basically it would be a bill that would make it so that your employers cannot demand that you be on a call or take a Zoom chat or something, or even deal with work emails past the end of your workday. This is something we've seen implemented in other countries. In France, it was First Nation in 2017 to implement it, and Argentina, Ireland, Mexico, and Spain have done the same. And yeah, I would just love to move to Spain and just have good food.
Who
and,
wouldn't?
Yeah, have time away.
No, I want Portugal. Work. But anyway,
you want Portugal? I mean, Portugal's great. Portugal's great. I just prefer the Spanish food, you know, but it's all good. It's your neighbors. We could be neighbors, Sherlyn, like right
exactly.
Over the border. Yeah.
Yes.
In some fun news, Warner Brothers has announced that a fifth Matrix movie is happening. And woo-hoo! I think a lot of people were a little worried because Lana Wachowski, who did The Matrix Resurrections without Laura Wachowski, she is only on board as a producer. So that she's not directing. Writing and directing will be Drew Goddard, who is a writer and director I love. So I'm actually pretty happy about this because Drew Goddard, he wrote on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, Lost. He directed Cabin in the Woods, which is a goddamn perfect deconstruction of horror movies, Trillin. If you have not seen Cabin in the Woods, you should just go do that.
I have. I loved it. Yeah.
It's great. Like, this guy is a genius and really smart around genre stuff, and also just a really good writer. He also, like, wrote The Martian, the film The Martian. Like, he adapted Andy Weir's The Martian and made that so-so book a much better story by being, because he's a better writer. So this is interesting. And The Matrix is one of those things where it's like, there is infinite potential to tell stories here. Like, as we saw in the Animatrix and so many things. So it doesn't have to be about Trinity and Neo and everything. Like, that story seems done. They're not saying who's going to be in it, but they did introduce some new characters in the last movie. And I'd love to see them, like, do more with that, or at least tell a wholly different story. I think they can do it.
I just want to say that for The Matrix, I just want it to be another Sense8 reunion. That's all. I know the Resurrections felt like a Sense8 reunion.
Yes.
Just keep bringing them back. That's all.
Did you see all of Sense8? Have we talked about Sense8?
Yes, I love Sense8. We've talked about it.
We've talked about Sense8. Yeah. Sense8 is great. That was the Wachowskis project with Tom Tykwer for Netflix. It is like a wild, like, not a fully connected story, but I freaking love that show. I need to rewatch it.
Mm-hmm. Love Sense8. So speaking it was a riot scene.
Have you seen the videos online, Trillin, of the Waffle House fights? The various brawls occurring Waffle Houses across the southern U.S.
I think I have on Reddit, probably.
Yeah, on Reddit or something. There was the awesome one of, like, a customer getting really riled up against this one Waffle House girl. They threw a chair at her, and she, like, grabbed the chair in midair and threw it back. It was, like, ultimate combo breaker. So the director of the Tekken games, Katsuhiro Harada, posted on X being like, what is up with Waffle House? Why are you all telling me to make a Waffle House stage in Tekken? And that's why he's a Japanese man who does not understand the Waffle House. And he's like, why do you guys want a Tekken stage there? I hope it actually happens. I hope they can do something. It can't be Waffle House itself. But for people who don't know, Waffle House is like it's an institution in the South. Like, it is a very simple diner, cheap food, but it's typically open 24/7. It is so reliable that if during a hurricane, if the Waffle House is closed, that's how you know shit's about to get real. Because Waffle House will stay open
I saw that.
Yeah.
That's how you know you're in, like, a bad part of town.
That's how you know you got to go. You got to evacuate. If the Waffle House shuts down, you got to go because things are really bad.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway, maybe we will eventually see a Waffle House Tekken stage. I'm sure somebody, like, on the PC side will work in some kind of mod for that. That would be cool to see. Let's move on to some stories around and gadgets. Steve Dent wrote about how to watch the eclipse that's occurring on Monday, April 8th. Really good piece about some advice and about where you should be to see it. From where
It's also, interestingly, how to take pictures.
How to take pictures of it, right? Like, to get a filter, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you don't want to burn your sensor out, I guess.
Definitely.
A lot of, like, little things.
Yes. Yeah. You don't want to burn your sensor out if you have an optical viewfinder in your camera. Don't do that. Don't point it at the sun. But also, like, a good reminder too, hey, if you plan to watch the eclipse, get some glasses. It's not too late to get some eclipse glasses. Maybe too late to mail order them, but, you know, I'm sure you can find them somewhere. Are you planning to take some time off to go see the eclipse outside, Trillin? Because it'd be a while until there's something this big.
I would love to take some time off.
Well, just go outside for an hour. Can you do that on Monday?
Maybe. Sure. I don't know. I'm not like, I mean, I've seen a lot of the eclipses in my life. Something else that I've seen on Reddit lately is, like, every time they say an eclipse is happening, they say it's not, you know, it's like the first one and not going to happen again for, like, another 145 years.
Region.
And yet, every year, there is one.
Not every year. So like, that's not how this works, really. Not every year.
No, I know. I'm exaggerating. Uh-huh. But, like, that's kind of the sentiment of the Reddit post that I'm referring to, which is that, like, it, every time it's being mentioned, it's like, oh,
yeah,
no,
I'm so sorry,
like,
that these Redditors are so disillusioned with a wonder of the universe. Like, how it is pretty wild that we live on a planet where our moon, when aligned with the sun directly covers it. That is, think of the chances. Like, do the math for that, of how what it would take for that to actually happen.
How many eclipses have there been in the last, I want to say, 5 years or 10 years?
There was one in, like, 2017. Yeah.
Okay. That
was
the big one. I'm gonna ask Jeeves.
You can go ask AI. But anyway, I'm saying it's a cool thing. And people who have more joy and spirit in their hearts than Sherlyn can go outside on Monday to go look outside. What's interesting, too, is that it is covering a large swath of America. So going from like Texas to Maine in a large diagonal line, that's the total coverage. From where I am in Georgia, it's going to be like 80% coverage, but still going to look pretty good. It's still going to look like something weird is happening up there on the sun. So I'm going to get the kids out of daycare a little early. We're going to go to a park and we're going to put the glasses on and take some pictures if we can. So I think that's cool. Steve Dent wrote up a great guide. Go check that out. Also want to point out Jess Condit, our gaming reporter, wrote a review of Open Roads, which is sort of an ASMR exploration game. It's set in 2003. So post 9/11, pre Razor era, according to Jess. And it's about a girl dealing with, I think, going back home, dealing with the separation of her parents. It sounds really dramatic, but really cool. So I kind of want to spend some time with this. Go check out Jess's review. And yeah, let's move on to what we're working on. Sherlyn, anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, I am working on a secret product review, and it's honestly going to be like the last review I write for a very long time until maybe the fall.
Because it's just so amazing, right? So it's the only thing you really need to review ever again.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's more like I just cannot find the time anymore to like actually write stuff besides and in addition to everything else I had to do. So we shot a video for this review yesterday. I am pretty excited to see how it turns out because I had like an interesting idea for this video and I want to see if we were able to execute it. But yeah, I mean, beyond that, you know, just general, like keeping the site running stuff, I guess. And by the way, in for the last decade, there have been at least an eclipse a year, but you're right that like it's not always visible from North America, but you know, in 2020 there were like two, one in June and one in December. 2019 there were three.
This is a big planet, Sherlyn. Like not everybody gets access to all the eclipses at the same time.
Sure. Anyway, yes, what are you working on?
I'm working on something around the Vision Pro, basically taking another look at it 2 months later. There have been a couple updates. The personas are better. That spatial personas thing I want to spend more time with and just get a sense of it. But also Apple has released some new immersive video stuff too. There was this thing that like highlights of the 2023 Major League Soccer Cup that look kind of incredible. And I hope we see more of this stuff just because the sheer video quality of those things. It's sort of like you're on the pitch right next to all the soccer players. Like it is so lifelike and realistic, and the depth is there, the resolution is there. So I hope we see them lean more into immersive video because I'm sure it takes a lot of work to actually produce, but the results are kind of amazing. So yeah, I'm hoping that's more of a thing moving forward with the Vision Pro or whatever else it is. I also reviewed the HP Spectre X360 14. This is a new 14-inch convertible from HP. It's pretty good. I'd say it's keeping the dream of the 2-in-1 PC alive. It's an okay tablet, but it's a pretty great laptop because it's fast, has a good keyboard. It can rotate the screen all the way around in different formations. So it's pretty good if you like these kinds of things. So yeah.
I want to quickly shout out, not just as we're talking about space and other stuff, but the White House apparently told NASA to create a new time zone for the moon.
Yeah.
As which, you do. Like, yeah, sure. But as we're all taking photos of the solar eclipse, just FYI, this week, one of my roundups also published. It's something I worked on, like, I guess 2 weeks or a week ago. It's the best smartphone cameras.
Yes.
Or the best, I guess, I don't know how you guys think about this term, but best camera phone, apparently. But anyway, yeah. If you're looking to buy a phone, just like with the top priority being its cameras, like that's a guide.
That sounds like the word camera phone sounds like you've come from 2005 when it's a rare feature to have cameras on phones, right?
So anyway, that's that's something I was working on maybe a couple weeks ago that came up too, yeah.
It'd be good to have a conversation, maybe with somebody, maybe with Steve Dent, around the love of the older cameras, especially like Since our podcast producer, Ben Ellman, has mentioned this at some point, that the kids, the social media kids, are getting into the older Fuji cameras. It wasn't just the point and shoots, but it is like the older Fuji X100s.
The film ones.
It's the digital ones, but it's the small ones. It's the ones with fixed lenses, yeah. And people like the... Apparently, it comes down to Fuji loving, like Fuji doing really well about like film emulation, about the look of what their cameras use. So
yeah,
that is cool. We should have a conversation around that at some point. Yeah, cool stuff.
There's also a lot of like fans of Fuji that are like using film again, like the resurrection of film and like whatever has been happening in years, like not just recently, but yeah,
it's the whole thing. I just bought my daughter a kid's first digital camera because she got a really cheap one and she can't stop taking pictures. I'm like, this is fun, we should encourage this. So it has a little selfie camera on the front. It can take like 12 megapixel pictures.
That's not bad.
So we're gonna have some fun with that. And I think, yeah, it's cool that people are spending a little more time thinking about their cameras outside of their smartphones too, right? Like to have a dedicated camera, it's a little different. It feels more purposeful rather than snapping something on your phone. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. What do you have, Sherlyn?
I finally got around to watching, I don't remember if I already mentioned on the show, Anatomy of a Fall.
Nice.
We already talked about this on
the
show?
I don't think so.
No, right? So Anatomy of a Fall is one of the movies that was up for like best film at the Oscars, if I'm not wrong. And it follows this family, I guess. It's really mostly a woman. Her husband died under mysterious circumstances. And
he falls.
Her son.
He falls.
He falls out of a house. So he falls, and that's the anatomy of that fall, really. And it's a really interesting like mix of like not procedural, but like a very family first / person first look at almost a courtroom drama. But like it's just so it spans so many genres, in my opinion. Sandra Hüller, the I believe German actress, does a really great job in this of like you just don't know if she did it or not. And you just like have to like it's one of those whodunits that you know watch with your friends and it's like, do you believe her? Do you not?
Yeah.
She's got sympathizers. She's got none. There's a key character, a key witness, or you know, person in the story who is the son who has like vision impairments, and it's whether or not they're reliable characters up to you to decide. It's really
great.
Well done.
It's great. Also, like a close look at the French legal system, which is kind of batshit, just like how wild
really
it can get compared to Americans.
When we get into the courtroom and the way they like present the case, the way the two sides can argue a case is less courtroom and more debate, honestly. Really just like no take turns sort of going on.
Definitely not like American courts. Like it is more like bombastic, a little more in your face. You know, no spoilers, Sherlyn, but where do you come down on the lady?
I honestly don't know.
I have an answer. Is it doesn't matter because she's better off.
Yeah, exactly.
She's better off. Like that's my answer, is that dude sucked. Dude really sucked.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, the first scene was really jarring for me. The opening of like, you know, I would just recommend turning down the volume.
No, you gotta turn it up. You gotta like, that's the point.
Or turn it up if you like Devendra. As in like, if you like the sound, right? If you
like being annoying,
like surrounded
AF.
By it.
Like, I think that's...
It is.
Yeah.
God. Yeah. but yeah, good movie. Really gripping. You definitely need to like have the headspace for it. It's not one of those you can turn it on and set it in the background. You really... want to be ready for this show.
It's gonna
suck you in.
Awesome. It's a great movie. I hope more people see it. I think it's on Hulu right now for you to see pretty
I think
easily.
That's where I saw it. Yeah.
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 Cool. Okay. Glad you saw it, Sherlyn. If at some point you build the I don't know, emotional energy to see Zone of Interest, which is the other Sandra Hüller movie.
That's next on my list. Yeah.
It is great, but it's also like, you just gotta steel yourself for that movie because it's just like,
and it's also Sandra Hüller, who's like amazing.
Yeah, she is amazing. She's like woman of the year, picture wise or movie wise.
All her little like soliloquies or whatever, or her little like not monologues but like long dialogue portions were so amazing in Anatomy of a Fall. So
she's great. I want to shout out real quick, I've been watching something as like dramatic and as affecting and as meaningful as Anatomy of a Fall, and that is X-Men 97. That is the X-Men reboot that is now airing on Disney Plus. And I have to say, I don't know if you grew up with the show, Sherlyn, but
I did.
It is kind of a miracle that this reboot exists because it is a direct continuation from where the original X-Men cartoon ended.
Oh, wow.
It's also like actually good because as much
is
as I love that show,
the same?
The animation looks, it's a better animation, but it like evokes the kind of jerkiness similar to like, you know, Into the Spider-Verse. It's a little jerky because it's evoking the original stuff. But what's amazing is that I've tried to rewatch X-Men the Animated Series as an adult. Mm. It's really hard mm-hmm. because it's one of those shows that doesn't quite hold up. It's a little, the writing's too cheesy. The acting wasn't very good. It was, it was always a little too cheesy compared to something like Batman the Animated Series or even Gargoyles, which are shows I loved as a kid and can still, you go back to it and be like, man, we had some good stuff back then. X-Men 97 is actually better written, better animated. I think like, just a better implementation of the X-Men verse in animated form. So I'm loving it. It is like watching Saturday morning cartoons again. It has the same theme song that they've redone.
I was just going to ask that they have the
Yes, they do. Okay. They know what they're doing here. But yeah, they remastered it. So it's like new animation over a, you know, newer form of that. But just good stuff, good drama, covering a lot of like the Chris Claremont X-Men stuff from the 80s. So if you've read the comics, you kind of know where the show is going, but there's good drama here. Like, I think it's really good. And it's also really relevant to our times. Like, there's a full on, you know, January 6th type event at the UN in the first episode. Like, they know exactly what they're doing. And the X-Men was always about like these people that society has turned against like unfairly. Maybe they deserve humanity too. I think that allegory is still very strong, maybe stronger than ever. So it's good to have the X-Men back, and maybe we'll have them back in movie form soon. I don't know, I'm looking forward to the Deadpool thing with Wolverine, but I need real X-Men. I need all of my X-Men back. So yeah.
Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. And with that, that's the end of this week's episode. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, all over the place. And I podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast, thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me anywhere, I am at SherlynLow on X. I am at SherlInstagram on Threads and Instagram. And then you can always email me at CHERLYNN@Engadget.com. Speaking of, email us your thoughts for the show at podcast@Engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. Oh my god, I had like was holding on to that.